This is Scott Allen from odecoded.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Coon from lazycoder.com.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of Herding Code. This week, we're going to be discussing the Witty Twitter project, partly because all three of the folks that are on the call right now, Kevin and Scott Coon and I, are regular contributors to it. So, and part of what makes this topical is this week there was a new WPF Twitter app that came out called Chirp, and that's from the guys at 1323. And I wondered what you guys thought about that if you gave it a run. I just threw a curveball at you, didn't I?
It made me cry. It made me too.
What did you think of that? That was just so timely. Yeah, I did play with it a little bit. It's very slick. It was my first reaction to it. I mean, it's very pretty. Very nicely designed. Very, kind of a good example of what I think they intended WPF to be all about. Like, just a very nice user experience, nice interaction. That being said, it also, like, it had some sort of jarring weirdness to it that kind of threw me, like, you know, sort of like over-design-y, I don't know. Like, for example, when you launch it, it's defaults to 50% transparency, I think it is. So, like, you know, you launch this, it brings up this login dialogue, and you're looking right through it, which just seems kind of weird to me. But, you know, I'm just like kind of cool, but not really all that functional from my perspective.
I kind of agree. I mean, I definitely like, it was funny because we've been looking at on Witty, you know, there were a lot of kind of like must have features people have been asking for a while. But Alan Lee, who started the project, and I have been having discussions like, okay, we need to get some new skins in. We need to do this and make some changes because it really looks like a old school. I mean, Witty does not look really like a WPF app. Traditionally, it looks like a Windows app. So the first thing I saw when I saw it was like, yeah, that's kind of along the lines we're thinking. But I did agree, like, by throwing out some of the metaphors, like, for instance, there's no scroll bar. And so you see all these tweets in the list, and you're like, okay, and I see kind of a semi-transparent one at the bottom. I know it's there. Let me see. What do I do? And, you know, the arrow keys weren't working, and, you know, like, and I saw other people on Twitter, like, from the web or stuff going, like, how do I post a tweet? Seriously, I don't know what to do, you know? And so it was, and the way that it works once you know is slick, you know? It's like you grab it and just throw it. Of course, that didn't work well on my laptop with the trackpad because you have to click and slide, and it was a little wacky. But it was interesting. So I guess it just reminded me a little bit of like if I had to be snarky about it, it was a little bit like if you saw the Mr. Plow episode of The Simpsons where Homer was Mr. Plow and then Barney became the Snow King, and they were both, you know, snow plow drivers, and then Homer Simpson competes with an ad, and it had this, like, it was done by some artsy director, and then at the end of the, and it was just like snow globes being thrown on the ground and shattering, and, you know, it was all in black and white, and at the end of it, Marge was like, was that your ad? And Homer was like, I don't know, you know. So I mean, it was a little bit like it's beautiful, but I'm not sure what to do with it.
My first thought was it's Paris Hilton.
In what way?
It's my first impression when I saw it.
In that it's a musical powerhouse?
Yes. In that it was getting a lot of attention without having a lot of use, but it was pretty. It took me like 10 minutes to figure out how to scroll, how to just see other tweets below the first five or six. Took me a little while to figure out how to actually send an update. I never did figure out direct messages or any kind of reply functionality or follow or anything like that. I mean, the infinite scroll is an interesting idea, but I don't know. If there was a, you know, scroll to top, I think it'd be a little bit more useful.
Yeah, it's interesting thinking about infinite scroll without the scroll bar. I think it's something that like is exciting and demos really well, and then like I'm not sure. Maybe, you know, like if you're following four people, or you know, like if you're not really heavily using it, maybe it would be. I don't know. Like once you got used to it, maybe it would be really nice. I did. Okay, so we've like begged on it some. What are some cool features?
They somehow got one or click once to work.
Yes.
Yeah, that was the first thing I noticed, is that it's click once. That's nice.
It showed me that there's a lot more we could do with WPF and in terms of the interface and skinning. Mm-hmm. Just some of the transparencies. But some of the transparency worked kind of odd. Like usually with Windows WinForms app, there'll be transparencies, but you can still grab in there kind of and drag it around. I couldn't quite do that. I kept clicking on the bird at the top, expecting it to do something.
Right.
Like, I thought if I annoyed enough, it would chirp, but I couldn't get it to chirp.
Side note, must insert cool Easter egg into Witty. Go on with what you're saying.
That's about all I've got.
Kevin, anything you thought was...
I found, just the sort of the flow of the user experience is very nicely done. I mean, like, the little animations, you know, the little, like, you know, sort of bubble expanding. Like, there's, like, Witty has got a few animations, but they're not very smooth, and they're a little bit herky-jerky. Whereas, you know, the like, for example, when you click the update button, and it sort of pops up, sort of, you know, bubbles up this window to type in. And, you know, that it's just a very smooth sort of transition. Which is very nice from a UX perspective. And you know, like the update windows has this sort of, to know how many characters you've typed, has this sort of overlay on the back, which shows you how many characters are left. So, I mean, this is a lot of little touches like that are just very nicely done. What else? It is sort of basic. I mean, it doesn't have a huge amount of just Twitter functionality, which is, you know, I assume that will come at some point. But it definitely makes Witty look a little clunky from a UX perspective.
Right. Yeah, I thought that one thing that was interesting is they do a lot of, like, in place. If you click on a tweet to reply, it's like kind of an in place sort of reply right there. I'm not sure that makes sense with what Witty does, because there are so many other features, but it's, you know, like there's a specific update panel at the bottom, and in order to do an in place, you would either have to get rid of the tweet area at the bottom of the page, or you'd have to keep them in sync, or do, you know, so I mean, it would be different.
That's actually one feature where I think it's the slickness kind of gets in the way a little bit, because, you know, you see the tweet, and then you click reply, and the little reply thing, the little in-place reply thing, hides the tweet that you're replying to. So you can't actually see what you're replying to.
Right.
Which is, you know, I'm not a big fan of.
I think that, let me see, what else did I like? When you're talking about the transitions, it's interesting. We've got this WPF bag of tricks, which is kind of like an animation transition library for WPF. And that's been in the app pretty much since the beginning, and it's just not used anywhere. But that makes it very easy to do any kind of slide things in and out and fades and that kind of thing. One other thing that I don't think this is using, but is definitely possible and that we could do with Witty is in .NET 3.5 SP1, there's the support for shaders. And you can do some crazy stuff with that, like, you know, when you mouse over someone's avatar, you can actually do like a pixel shader thing on their avatar. I'm not sure if there's a lot of point, like maybe it would just be gratuitous over the top. But I think that's, you know, small, like with these things, you go over the top and it's quickly annoying, but something that's just barely like, hey, did it just do something really cool? Like there's that, like, just perfect spot where you get make it like subtle but noticeable. There's definitely a place for a lot more transitions and glitziness.
So one of the things I've been wanting to do architecturally with Witty is kind of flip the I don't know how to say this. Like, I want each individual message to be its own object, and I want the service to tell the interface what object should load in that particular slot, and then that object would be responsible for displaying its own context menu and functionality. And this, I think, would lead down the – I don't know if I'm explaining this right, but this would lead down the path to having plug-in services in Witty. So like with FriendFeed, you don't have a direct message feature, but you have things like, you know, post a message or, you know, comment on a message, things like that. And so it seems like you'd be able to display those in line if you had a common, you know, iMessage box interface that had, you know, specific methods on it, like get context menu, get, you know, things like that. Or, and I think that would decouple the interface from the service to a certain extent and make things like pluggable services possible. But WPF is still this amorphous kind of blob to me. It's just, you know, it's kind of like Perl. There's 1,000 things to do one thing in XAML. And trying to figure out how you're supposed to do it or what the best way is or how you can achieve things. Because it seems like it's so different from the usual WinForms model where, you know, you just derive something from, you know, a control and go from there. And then you can control the UI and the drawing and all that. I don't know. That may be crazy talk. It's upset the baby already. Maybe I should stop.
No, I mean, as somebody who comes from a WinForms, more WinForms-y background, and I'm sort of learning WPF as I go on Witty, it's an immense framework, and there's a lot to learn. And you're right, there's, you know, 20 different ways to do something, and it's not always obvious which is the right way to do it, and it's the breadth of the framework could definitely be a barrier to kind of getting your toes wet.
I was thinking about that a little bit. I was the most recent thing I did. People have been asking forever, and I've been wanting forever to be able to select text in a tweet. You know, any reply, direct message, just a tweet. And before it was a list box, and inside the list box were text blocks. And a text block has the idea of runs where you have like. You have a run of three, you know, just plain words, and then you can add in an inline, which is like a hyperlink control. And the reason that's important is so that you can, if you click on someone's username, that takes you to the user page, or if you click on a link, a hyperlink, then it actually navigates to that. So it actually builds that out, and there's a control, a tweet text box that builds that. And the problem is that it's just a label, so it's not selectable. So I discussed this a little bit over Twitter with Laurent Bougnon, who was on our show before, and I apologize for mangling your name. And we talked about some different things, and finally we were like, you know, we could just use a read-only rich text box. And then I searched online on Stack Overflow, and Alan Lee had asked about that back in September, that exact thing. And he's like, hey, I'm trying to do a rich text box, and, you know, I need to do this and this. All this to set the stage for talking about, you know, the whole thing of it being a huge framework. And it was some very difficult work to get that to happen. And one just small example that you wouldn't think is an issue is that when I put a rich text box on, you know, bounded in the list box, it had a white background. You know, it was like you'd expect a normal text entry field. It had a white background. And there was no simple way to say set the background to not white because it was part of the control template. And this is a C# file. I don't know if this is making any sense because I'm talking about code issues. But in order to fix that, I had to override the onApply template method. I had to get a template child by name, and it's capital B, lower name D. I had to cast it as a listbox Chrome object, which is part of the Microsoft.windows.themes namespace, which isn't normally in Windows Presentation Framework. You have to add a DLL reference to it. And then I had to set the background, you know, to a transparent brush. So it's the kind of thing where there are some, they make some easy things easy, and then some things like that, which are actually, you know, to make a text box transparent should not be, should not take hacking around at that level. I mean, and yet, you know, it does. And so I think there's some definite like leaky abstractions in here. And as I was doing that, I was almost thinking, you know, like there's Flex, there's this layer of Flex on top of Flash, which I know does completely different things, but in a way it abstracts it and makes like an application, you know, abstraction. And I was just thinking like we need a WPF light layer. I don't know if adding another abstraction on top would be better, but it was more work than I thought.
Sounds like it. Well, I'm like a total newbie to WPF. I've got a couple coworkers who have been doing a lot more with it than I have. And I've been listening to their grumbling over the last few months of, you know, like weird little WPF-isms and like inconsistencies in how things are applied, you know, whether you're inside a list box or outside a list box. And so I'm definitely, you know, weird sizing things, and, you know, there's, I don't remember all the specifics of what they were talking about, but I definitely seems like there have been some things that were, you know, violated the principle of least surprise.
Right. Can you think of anything that you'd worked on in recently in Witty that was more difficult or just, you know, violated that least surprise fun thing? No? Okay, show over. Let me see. You worked on that all-in-one.
Yeah, the combined timeline.
Yeah, and I think that with that, I think you were saying that there was some work in figuring out the color coding.
Oh, yeah. Figuring out how to apply. Like, for example, there was an animation that Woody was doing, a color transition so that when new tweets come in, they sort of flash yellow and then, you know, go back and then the yellow sort of fades out. And when I put the inline reply stuff in, I wanted to highlight replies so they were in their own sort of, you know, a distinctive color. And it took me a while to realize that, and I wasn't getting that. I wasn't getting the highlight color, even though I had specified it in the XAML. And it took me a long time to figure out that you can specify on the animation, you know, that does this yellow flash for new things. You can specify when that's done, does it leave the color at its final color, or does it reset the color back to what it was at the beginning of the animation? So I had it set wrong, basically. So it would do the yellow flash and then leave the color at the final transition color instead of using the color that I had specified. Anyway, that's a long, sort of boring story, but it took me a long time to figure that out. And it's one of those things where it's like, it's really hard to kind of figure out what it's doing, if that makes sense. I mean, like, what's the sequence that these things are applied in? Because it's all declarative, so it's all outside of your control. And I don't know if there's debugging tricks that I don't know anything about, but, you know, when you've got transitions happening and you've got, storyboards being played, you know, you can't really see the sequence of those things as they're firing. So that's definitely been something that threw me off.
Right. As you were saying that, it kind of reminds me a little bit of the whole, you know, with ASP.NET, there was the page lifecycle, and there's a little bit of like, you know, like you put a tag on a page and then some magical things happen, and then also your events get fired. And so there was already some of that, but then you add in transitions and you add in templating, and you know, it's like it is kind of a little bit of like a Heisenberg thing as to what's going on. I the only way really that I found out or that pointed me in the right direction was I used this Snoop tool. I believe it's by Peter Blois, BLOI.us is his website. And Snoop is kind of like, they've always had these, what, like Spy Plus Plus was for old school apps. And then there's, what is it, Silverlight Spy. There's Firebug, you know, like all these tools that let you kind of spy on a running app and see like what the heck's going on. So I used Snoop and was able to dig in down the visual tree and say, okay, this text box right here is this, you know, BD, it's a list box Chrome and its name is BD, and I didn't create it, and it's nowhere in the XAML, but it was created because of that's the default theme for Windows. And so, you know, and then I at least had that magical knowledge and I could search for listbox Chrome BD and find somebody saying about like, you know, here's some information about overriding it. But I agree, there's without tools like that, it's really hard to debug and see what's going on and to understand.
Another example was I was trying to figure out some binding stuff. So binding a text box, I think, or text block to a converter, value converter, and it wouldn't fire my value converter, and I couldn't figure out why the hell it wasn't firing it, and I was like, you know, this binding stuff, like I have no real way to see what's going on with the binding, you know, I have no real way of saying, you know, at this point this is when the binding is applied and this is when I should expect it to be, you know, called. And it turns out I was just doing something incredibly stupid. I was looking at the wrong skin, so it didn't have the binding expression in the XAML at all. But I didn't really know of a way to figure that out, I guess. It wasn't really that apparent to me. So binding is another one of those black magic things, kind of like declarative stuff, where it's like, you know, deep in the bowels of the frameworks, it's doing stuff that I have no visibility into.
Well, with regards to the binding, I was going to mention that Walt Richter has a pretty good series. I can't remember if it's in Code Magazine or in MSDN. I believe it's in Code Magazine, where he's going through data binding and binding it in WPF. And he's done a lot of work, and he does a lot of training on WPF. I hear things from like different people who are in the WPF realm, and they keep telling me that I need to learn command bindings or something like that, and they're the coolest part of the framework, but I can't seem to find anything other than the usual MSDN, you know, click here to show a box examples, and I don't know if you guys have heard any more about that, or
you know, I've heard the same that commands are very powerful, and I haven't dug into them as much because they're not available in Silverlight, and so I'm bringing mostly like Silverlight background into WPF, which is not the best way to do it. But
I was actually just starting to look down that route because I was looking at adding the mark tweets as read feature, you know, where it would show you tweets that you haven't read yet as having a little icon next to them, and then you can say, you know, I've read this, which I was going to do with command binding. But then I spent a few minutes on it. I'm like, well, then now we've got templates that have buttons, and we need to wire those up to commands, and I I ran out of time and mental energy to look at it. But it's definitely is the avenue I was pursuing for that feature. But I'm starting to...
The mark is red feature, because there seems to be two kind of sorts of people that deal with Twitter in different ways. There's the people like me who, you know, just kind of jump in whenever and maybe read back a few pages and then go on and just kind of go forward from there. And there's people who treat it like an inbox, and they want to know what they've missed since they were gone. And so for me, like the mark is red feature, you know, it doesn't really matter to me that much. But some of my friends that use Twitter, they really like the ability to say I've read this one or these are new since I last logged in.
Yeah, and there's some different approaches to it too. Like I've used TweetDeck a little bit, and a nice feature in TweetDeck is that you can kind of get a hybrid of that. Like you can have multiple views. I don't like that it pretty much requires you to use multiple columns for, like, there's some usability issues to it, but they're definitely onto something, and that's been a very popular one lately. And the nice thing with that is I can have kind of my recent tab where it's just kind of the fire hose and things flow by, and if I catch them, that's great. And then I can have, you know, another column with replies, which Witty has too. But then you can have these other columns that are watch windows, and you can have a group, and you can say, these 10 people are my inbox. Like, I don't ever want to miss something that they say. And so then this collects those ones. And you can also do a search. So you can say, using the Twitter search API, that's really easy to do. That's at search.twitter.com. And you can say, I want to watch for my company name, or I want to ego surf and watch for anyone, you know, or whatever. I'm really interested in, you know, if anyone talks about WPF command bindings or, you know, whatever. And so, I think that that's a nice way to kind of get the combination. I agree that for me, I kind of scan back a little bit, but it's just too much. Like I can't keep up with everybody.
Well, this is an interesting sort of difference in how people, you know, various people use Twitter. So like, some people just follow just tons and tons of people, right? You know, hundreds and hundreds of people. And there's really no way that they could ever keep, you know, they could never keep up with reading every single tweet from every one of those people. It's just sort of their Twitter stream is just it's a river that they're sort of watching go by them. And every once in a while they'll see something interesting poking out of the river. Whereas I'm a different kind of user. I control the number of people I follow very closely. And, you know, like it was a big deal for me when I went over 100. Like, I really don't want to get to the point where I'm following so many people that the people that I'm really interested in get lost in the noise. And so, you know, there's sort of two ways you can approach that. One is to use a tool like TweetDeck, which I played around with when it first came out, but haven't really glommed onto. And the other way is you keep it to a very small set of users that you're very interested in what they have to say. And I fall into that bucket. I constrain my follower set, partly because I don't want to be dependent on a tool like Twirl, like TweetDeck, because I like to read my Twitter stream from 5 different machines. And once I do that, then if I'm using the web interface, and then I don't have all this power that TweetDeck gives me, and you know, I lose the ability to sort of follow the interesting conversations.
Yeah. So I follow 467 people, I think, at last count, which is too many. Definitely too many to like follow everything. I usually if I have a conversation with someone, I follow them. So I think that there's good to that. And then there's also kind of like when you do the whole river of information approach, you kind of have to a little bit. I remember one time I had some blog idea back when I used to actually blog a little more often, and I forgot it, and it was driving me nuts. And Jeff Atwood told me, like, don't worry about it. If it's good enough, it'll come back to you. And I have to think that a little bit too with things like blogs and tweets and all that stuff. It's like, if something's worthwhile, it'll come back. Like it's you don't usually get just one chance at information. So which camp are you in, Scott?
I'm in the whatever camp.
Oh yeah, you already said that. Dumb question. Strike that from the record.
I mean, yeah, I do tend to look. Sometimes I go back as far as like 6 or 8 pages if it looks like people are on some weird tangent, and I'll go back and I'll, you know, why are all these people freaking out? But you know, I'm following 371 people, but not all of them talk all the time. There's probably a lot of people in there that, you know, I could go through and trim out. One of my little side projects, which mostly worked, but I got tired of trying to keep up with the Twitter API, was a little JavaScript applet that would go through and sort your following list by the last time they updated. And you could set, it's a feature I wanted to add to Witty too. I call it the dinosaurs list. I got the idea from Brent Simmons' Net Newswire. He has a window in there you can view called Dinosaurs, and it shows you all the RSS feeds that haven't updated in, you know, 90 days or something. You can decide if you want to keep them around or if they're dead. I thought about applying that towards, you know, Twitter people that you're following. You know, who's the dead weight on my follow list? Who's never updating?
But if they're never updating, does it matter?
Does it matter? Yeah, that's the other thing. You know, does it really matter if they're not updating? They're not noise, but, you know, some people like to keep it clean, you know, so they know exactly who they're following. And I don't know if I fall onto that list. That's why it wasn't really important. It was more of a mental exercise. Actually, the coolest part about it was that it was completely client-side. It ran an HTML page, and it used a couple of tricks to go in and get the JSON calls and pull them back without having to, you know, to get around the same origin policy and everything. So that was another kind of interesting side effect to that little project. It's still up there. I've got it at Google Code under Twitter applets. If we ever get a plugin system kind of baked into Witty, those would be ideal candidates for plugins. Another thing I'd like to be able to, you know, another plugin idea I had was sync my Twitter favorites with Delicious or some other bookmark library. I don't know. Seemed like an interesting idea.
Yeah, you were talking before about this idea of maybe using Meph to do plugins. Do you want to talk about that a little? No?
Uh-oh. Did we lose K. Scott? I mean, Scott K.
Maybe he's got the screaming baby problem.
No, I think what I was talking about earlier was using the managed extensibility framework to load up themes or skins in Witty, because it seemed like that was the lowest hanging fruit. Since the skins are kind of self-contained, there's XAML files, I think. So compiling them up, you know, into an assembly and then using Meph to load those skins in, I think would be relatively easy. I wasn't sure about the, I wanted to go back in and look and see how Witty applies the skins to the current interface. If it news them up and then somehow swaps them out or applies them, or if it just says, you know, apply this to it. Cause that's another part of WPF that is kind of, you know, magic cloud, stuff to me, you know, how that happens. But yeah, using something like Meph at that point to, you know, load up plugins would be, you know, pretty easy. But it seems like there's a lot more work that need to go into plugins than just the skins. You know, so we need things like some sort of I pre-filter, I post-filter, you know, or pre- and post-events to hook into, you know, for things like, you know, or maybe on change kind of thing for that update area, to do things like the URL shortening on the fly, you know, so as soon as you find a URL in there, swap it out, do this.
We've actually got a patch. We have a patch for that just we're looking at, but
oh, nice, nice.
And the idea with that one is it actually wouldn't swap out on the fly until you hit 140 characters.
Oh yeah.
The benefit being you actually use a readable URL. But yeah.
Yeah. And then, yeah, so you could extend that. So you hit update and you have maybe have an Amazon, you know, link to Amazon in there. Maybe you have a filter that goes through and allows you to insert your affiliate ID. And then it will take any Amazon URLs that you put in and automatically put in your affiliate ID and create a link off of that. Or, I don't know, something that would allow you to maybe reply to multiple people at once or DM multiple people at once. I think that one needs to be kind of handled with care. Otherwise, Witty turns into the spammer's tool. But all of these things kind of require a kind of eventing model around, you know, the message sending itself, which I think we can abstract away from the actual service pretty easily and just implement, you know, as a controller feature, so to speak, or maybe that's a VM feature. I don't know how that fits in the MVVM thing.
Right. Kevin had actually mentioned that a little before, the whole idea of a pipeline sort of thing almost, where
exactly.
And you could have that with incoming messages as well, to say like, okay, this is a new incoming message. I want to expand out all the URLs. Okay, I want to see, is this, you know, does this deal with something color coded? Is this, you know, is it a reply? Make sure, you know, and just
right. So
just
channel. Even something as simple as hovering over a tiny URL or an is.gd, mm-hmm. and having it go out and look and find out what the actual URL is and display it. Kind of an anti-phishing kind of thing, yeah.
Right, yeah. I've gone out and I've looked up, they all have APIs, you know, where you can say, here's an ISGD thing, give me back the URL. You know, I mean, obviously you don't have to click through them to see. So I've got those listed and something to do that. So you mentioned MVVM, and I don't think we really talked about it, but I just wanted to mention that. Or did we already talk about MVVM?
Only briefly.
I think so, yeah.
We desperately need it, I have to say, when you look through the code.
Yeah.
I've got a big change thing on my hard drive where I've kind of abstracted out a witty.controller project, and I've started moving things over. But there's just so many dependencies.
Yeah.
Like I'm just trying to abstract away the bootstrapping in app.xaml. And, you know, it's going and getting app settings and, you know, I don't have access to app settings in the controller, so I got to figure out how to get to those. And mm-hmm. and there's, you know, I got red squiggles everywhere when I started moving stuff over. But then I started to do a little bit of a DI with some of the controller and the service, at least. I got a reference to the Ninject library in there, and I was starting to work on that, but it's nothing that I'd want to commit yet. And I think I mentioned one day that I thought maybe I'd branch it off just so I could start committing to it somewhere. And, you know, maybe people smarter than me could take it up and run with it.
Right.
Because one of the things that Witty's kind of suffered from is are the Bungie committers, where they kind of come in and they make, you know, big sweeping changes halfway, and then they lose interest and go away. And then we've got this big pile of dependencies sitting in there, and nothing's happening with them.
Yeah, that definitely is a challenge with an open source project. When patches are good, and they're like the you know, committers or you know, people who will contribute code is kind of lifeblood for the project. But you do definitely have that. People have different styles, and this is definitely one of those where people will get involved partly because they want to pick up some WPF skills and work on a WPF application. But like, for instance, there's a lot of code that's just in events inside of mainwindow.xaml.cs. And that's, you know, it's partly because that's easy for someone to come in, make a patch, and get out. And it's hard to incrementally refactor an app, you know, with a bunch of drive-by committers. So that definitely is something where it just takes at some point where you say, okay, we're stepping back and we're doing this.
Well, I'm curious, what was it that initially got you guys interested in contributing?
Well, so what happened was, I think Alan announced it. I went and downloaded it and ran it, and I liked it, but I immediately saw that I wanted keyboard shortcuts. And I thought that I could possibly, you know, it was the getting them in there was an actual possibility because I'd done keyboard shortcuts a lot in WinForms apps. And I figured, you know, that's got the same kind of hooks in it. So I asked Alan, I said, hey, I've got a patch here, you know, for keyboard shortcuts for opening up things. And my keyboard shortcuts are still in there, so yay. And Alan said, well, here, you can have commit access. And I, oh, okay. So I went ahead and committed it in. And then later on, I noticed that I wanted to be able to add functionality. I wanted to be able to add things like reply. What I really wanted to do was I really wanted them to be in the tweet box window itself. So within the context of the tweet, I wanted there to be little icons for reply or DM or follow or something like that. but I couldn't figure out how to overlay stuff in that, in WPF, because I knew even less XAML then. So then I said, oh, well, there's a context menu that's available, and that seems like it's pretty easy to put in. So I put in the context menu. And, from there on, I just kind of, so the majority of the commands from the context menu are ones that I put in, and I kind of refactored some of Twitterlib in the process. And that since then, I haven't committed too much. I mean, I started working on a multi-threaded witty part until someone mentioned to me that you could just set the priority on the dispatch to background. But yeah, since then, life has not permitted me to work on it much. But anyway, that wasn't the question. The question was how to get involved, and I think I answered it. Go ahead, John. Sorry.
I'm not sure how I got involved. I work with Alan. That's probably where I saw it. I had used some different Twitter client apps before and gave this a spin. And then I'm not sure at what point I decided. I think it was like I just wanted to. Oh, I know what it was. I had used Witty for a while. And the updates were distributed via zip files. And I thought, well, I can build an installer for these. My favorite installer program is InnoSetup. So I started building out those installers. And then people were talking about Twirl, and I thought, okay, I'll take a look at that. I liked the compact skin in Twirl a lot better. The default skin, the default arrow skin in Witty is kind of big. And, at the size I was using, I'd get like 4 or 5 tweets on the screen. It's just kind of, seemed overkill. So I thought, well, let me get in there and tweak this. And, I know some XAML from Silverlight. Let me look at, give it a shot. And so that actually went pretty smoothly. It was, I had to learn a few new controls and stuff, but really it was kind of a little trial and error. So I got that set. And then once I did that, then I already had the source installed. And so then next time I wanted something, I just kind of went in and made changes. I think that some of the big things I did, or some of the, like for instance, a lot of it, of the things that I've been doing have been as a user, and like one thing that I added was a filter tweets mechanism where it was football season and there was a lot of political stuff going on, and I was just like, not. I love these people, but I don't care what football teams they're after. And so I added this thing that just said Broncos, whatever. And just and so I said filter all those. So there's a regular expression. And if you tweet something about the Broncos, I won't see it. And then I also noticed that some people would just go on a rant about something, and I was done with it. Two people would start arguing. So I added this kind of timeout feature. So you can right click on somebody and say temporarily ignore a user. And that basically just keeps track of that and says, okay, for the next half hour, just anything that this person says, just, Bitbucket. So those are some things, but really for me, it's been mostly like, just, I'd like this feature. I use this program every day. I'll go ahead and add it in. And then kind of more lately, as people have been contributing, then I saw these patches come in and I thought, these really, like, I'm happy to do this and let me take a look at this. And it's fun to facilitate that. Like, it's fun to be involved at that level in a project and help people get their code out, deploy it into a usable app. So that's my little story. Kevin?
I'm the most recent arriver to the contributor team, I guess, of the three of us anyway. For me, it's kind of funny because I didn't put it all together at the time, but back when I first started using Twitter, there was the very first Twitter app that I ever ran across was called WPF Twitter, which was very basic and very kind of clunky, but used a little bit of the WPF-isms, like it had some transparent class effects and stuff. I'm pretty sure it was actually, that was Alan's first little stab at this.
It was.
I haven't gone back. It's my memory serves me then. So then at some point he sort of went off and made a real, made Witty, which was the real client. That just seemed to be sort of a little experiment. But at that, I don't remember exactly when, but at some point I discovered Twirl, which was and continues to be one of the better Twitter clients. And it introduced things that were like a revelation to me, like the combined timeline, you know, where your replies show up in your main timeline. And, you know, all the affordances to make it really easy to reply and, you know, send direct messages and all that stuff. And I was really psyched about Twirl. And I still like it a lot. But at some point, they kind of lost their way. From my perspective, they started trying to become the universal client. They added friend feed support. They added, you know, support for Identica and Pounce. And, you know, it was a bunch of stuff that did not in any way enhance my experience as a Twitter user. And I like went on their website and I like made a million suggestions of things that features that I would love to see and nothing, you know, like essentially the enhancements for the Twitter user just kind of stopped. I do know that they just put out a new version and I haven't actually looked at it yet. So maybe they've put some more stuff into there, but at some point I just got sick of not getting the features that I wanted out of the tool. And so I said, ah, screw it. I'm going to look at this, you know, Witty stuff. And, you know, so you can sort of control your own destiny. That's like one of the cool things about, you know, open source projects. And so first thing I wanted to contribute was the feature that was the killer feature to me, which is the combined timeline, the inline replies, which I did. And of course it had a bug in it and I'm working right now on fixing that. But but, you know, like I'm in Twitter a lot. I have it sort of running on a second monitor a lot, if not all day. And so, like, there's a lot of features that I would love to see in a Twitter client, which would make it, you know, I would directly benefit from. And if I have to write them, then I guess that's the only way I'm going to get them. So I'm curious what your guys' sort of pet favorite features would be. Like, what are your sort of top two or three features that you'd love to see get in the near future?
I'm pretty good. That autocomplete for the at replies, just I don't know how I survived without it before. One thing I would like to add in is the ability to favorite a tweet, which I think would be it's a relatively painless thing to add to the context menu. But also then tied into that would be a way to view your favorites or to view the favorites for someone who you're, you know, whose profile you're viewing. I'd actually kind of like to take I'm kind of toying with the idea of making the tabs, you know, how Witty has each little timeline or whatever in a tab, making them tear off. So you could tear off and have the replies tab in a floating window and then have your main timeline going. So not necessarily the big, huge, take up the entire screen UI of TweetDeck, but just a way where you could create these views, or maybe you create a search, and maybe have a window in another tab on there called search, and you enter in your search term, and you can say, you know, some way to tear off that window and just have it, you know, as a separate window. And but I don't know how that would work in WPF. That's the main thing that's limiting me right now, is I just don't know WPF that well. I have lots of cool ideas, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to implement them in Witty. But I think the ability to favorite and view those favorites, and I think once the UI has the ability to tear off windows, and you know, kind of like you can with Google Chrome or Safari, and just have the windows wherever you want, I think that's going to be a huge, huge benefit to people.
One thing I'd love to do would be the actually what Scott had said he wanted to do originally, which is to, instead of having the context menu, have those sort of overlay sort of visual affordances that, you know, like Twirl and Chirp have for doing things like replies and you know, retweets and that sort of stuff. I think that would make it just a little bit nicer experience. I'd love to put in some auto throttling. We've talked a little bit about this. You know, currently you set how often you want to poll Twitter. If you do it wrong, it, you know, you start running into API limits and all that stuff. So John and I have talked a little bit about this, you know, making that a little bit smarter so you can just say, you know, optimize it for me. And it uses all the information from the Twitter API to know how often you should be calling back so you don't run into those limitations.
Right. To throttle down, saying, okay, when you've got a lot of, because you start with 100 per hour. So, you know, at the beginning, you know, as long as you're, when you've got a lot available, use them. And then as you start getting close, to kind of clamp down on that.
Right.
Well, they could help out a lot too if they would unify some of their API calls.
Yeah.
So instead of having to go get replies, timeline, direct messages, just say, get me everything for this user.
Yeah, it would be nice.
Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of things. Like, for instance, in order to get a list of friends, they will give you 100 per page, which would make sense for most people, but I follow 467 people, and so that's 5 API hits each time that it gets the friends list. So that actually was a problem on our 2.1 release for people that follow a lot of people, because we're refreshing the friends list every 20 minutes. So a soon-to-be-released change is to throttle that back to 35 minutes. I'm sorry.
That was one of the annoying things I ran into with my little Twitter applet for the dinosaurs, was in order to get a list of the people you were following, you know, had to, okay, so how many, I could get their profile, find out how many people they were following, store that, divide it by 100, take the remainder, make that many calls. And, you know, so every one of those hits was against the API limit. It's very, very poorly done. Sorry, Kevin. Feel free to express yourself.
Another thing I've been playing around with, sort of spiking on, is I think some other people are doing some work in this area also, but improving the URL shortening experience. Kind of the behavior I've always wanted has been when you paste in a URL, it gets shortened. And there's none of this. I mean, so I know there's some logic in there now that says if it's over 140 characters and there's a URL in it, then automatically shorten it. But that's a little too non-deterministic for me, because you don't know whether when you shorten it, are you still going to be under 140 characters. And so I think there's some more that we can do in there. My little hack version basically just shortens any URL that's pasted in, but I think that's too simplistic too. But that's an area I'd like to improve. Also in the update box, some more visual cues around when you've exceeded the 140 characters, like Twirl, for example, which is kind of my model for a lot of my thinking, because it does some things really nicely. Twirl like actually changes the color of the text that's outside of your 140 characters. So it sort of becomes gray when the letters become gray when they go out beyond 140 characters. That requires some more, you know, like that requires using a rich text box instead of a text box and doing some fancy stuff. But, you know, little visual affordances like that, I think really sort of add to the whole experience. And I'd love to get some of that little stuff in there.
We already talked a little bit about the feature I'd like to see most, which is there's tons of them, because I've done a lot of work on the issues list. There's 200 issues on the issues list. A lot of them are enhancements, and I've started work on some of them, so it's hard to choose. But the favorite one that I'd like to see is the ability to have an inbox or a group of, to be able to group users. So to be able to say, this is my core group users, I always want to see their stuff, or this is my, you know, Microsoft developer group, or this is my friends group, you know, and you know, of course those don't intersect at all. But so I think that's a huge feature for me. Similar to like TweetDeck does, I think the UI could get a lot better. And it could be a better feature than TweetDeck, but that ability to group different users together and group searches, I think would be huge for me. And on that note, today, Adam Kinney, who is a I don't know what his job title is. He's a developer evangelist-y kind of guy working at Microsoft. And he was working with XAML from back when before Microsoft was shipping it, because he worked at a company called XAMLon. Or I don't know if that was the company's name. Maybe that was the product's name. But he showed me an app today called PhotoSuru. And I think you can get that at photosuru.com. And it's got it's a WPF app, and it's got a lot of, you know, kind of show offy sort of things. It's a sample app. But one thing that I like is it's got a really nice smart resize. So when you're at full screen, it's got things laid out. There's some horizontal and some vertical things. And then when you shrink it up, it just smartly shrinks down. So I think there's definitely, this is not the way that Witty should work, but this illustrates that there's a lot that can be done with a smart resize, and can be a lot better than TweetDeck. And on that note, we should probably close soon, but I did want to also say that when I talked to Adam, part of the reason I was talking to him was because he has said that he is excited about contributing to the Witty project. So he is going to, he's very good with design and with XAML stuff. So it's an open source project. We're happy to take contributions from anyone. And so, you know, I think it would be great. So it's in no way, you know, taking over a project. It's contributions to an existing one. But I think that could be really cool. And he also said he could maybe get us some help on MVVM refactoring from folks that know it pretty well. So I think that's exciting. I don't know. Any thoughts? Cool. Okay, should we wrap up here then?
Sure.
I mean, I think we could go on for a long time, but okay. So I'm going to do the outro, last chance.
Okay, actually, wait a sec. There's one more thing I want to throw in there, because all the other features that I described are sort of, you know, basic. Like, if I knew how to do WPF better, I could probably knock out really quickly. The one thing that I'd really love to solve that I keep having grand designs on, but I haven't figured out yet, is some way that you can have Witty running on more than one machine at a time and not have to worry about, you know, you're going to run into API limits, so we got to shut it down here before I can launch it over here. I think that would actually be a really awesome feature. But it would require some sort of coordination amongst the various witties, and I haven't figured that part out yet. But that's like
Are you saying you want to write a peer-to-peer witty?
Yeah, pretty much. Awesome. I mean, I've played around with ideas like using Azure message queuing services to, you know, relay messages back and forth to each other. So each one, you can say, I'm the primary, everybody else shut yourself down. Or you could, you know, post a shared file on an FTP server that says, I'm the primary, everybody else shut down. I mean, it's some kind of coordination scheme that would let you identify, like, which one I'm sitting at right now, so that the others can put themselves to sleep, essentially. That's my dream.
I used to use RSS Bandit a lot, and they had some things, and that was mostly for synchronization of what you'd read. But they had that kind of thing where there was, I'm sure if Azure had been around back then, they would have had it, but they had like FTP, file share, file on disk, whatever. But there are all these different ways where you could, like, on startup and shut down, or during, you know, as you were working, it would just be saving your state out. And now it wasn't, I never really tested to see, but I don't think it was like on the fly communicating between the two. It was more like I shut down at work, I come home, and I have my same state. But that is definitely that sounds like that would be really nice. That was actually, you know, we've had little offline and chat and stuff, but we haven't really spent an hour before talking about all the different ideas we had and stuff. I think that was pretty neat.
Yeah. Yeah, half the time I keep thinking, you know, I should just work the issues list. And then the other half I think, you know, that's all I fucking do at work is work the issues list.
Right.
Right.
The only just, thing...
Like do whatever do you want to do. That's what I...
I agree. The only thing in defense of the issues list is there's a lot of good, fun ideas on the list, actually. But...
True.
But, whereas usually on the issues list, it's like convert TPS reports to, you know, PDFs and blah, blah. You know, I mean, just not fun stuff. But there's some pretty interesting ideas. And then...
Or the entire issue says witty crashes at startup.
Right. In version 0.1.3. which actually we solved that one, which was very hard to do, but it had to do with corrupted user settings, and we had to do a check on startup. One other thing I found is like bang for the buck wise, if I'm brain fried and I don't want to work on something, I'll just check out the issues list and look for patches and go through and apply them. All right, that's all the time. No. All right, we have plenty more time this week, but we don't want to spend it with you. Come catch us next week. Goodbye.